You're listening to The Higher Ed Marketer, the podcast for marketing professionals in higher education. Join us every week as we talk to the industry's greatest minds in student recruitment, donor relations, marketing trends, new technologies, and much more. If you're looking for conversations centered around where marketing in higher ed is going, this podcast is for you. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to the Higher Ed Marketer Podcast. I'm Troy Singer.
And I'm Bart Kaler.
And today we have the pleasure of talking to Brian McDonald. He is one of the co-founders of the Zillion Agency. They are located in both Philadelphia, Pennsylvania and Toronto, Canada. But I'm excited because he is someone, and I go into this when we talk with him, that I met at AMA. He is one of the most inspiring and knowledgeable people when it talks about building brands for higher ed. And he comes from the commercial side of things. So he brings a lot of knowledge to it. And everyone, I hope that you stick around and listen to our conversation with Brian because it is incredible.
Yeah, I really like Brian a lot. He and I share a common background. I mean, he came more from the larger agencies with Leo Burnett and Olga V. Mather type things. I came from a smaller agency, but kind of we both did a lot of consumer work before we ended up in higher ed. And I just love the fact that, you know, he has that same philosophy of how can we learn from corporate and consumer products and brands to be able to apply that to be very effective in higher ed. And I appreciate that not only does he do that, but the Zillion Agency does that as well. And so it's just such a fun conversation to kind of be able to, you know, banter that back and forth with him.
He does a good job within the conversation of building those bridges. And without further ado, here's our conversation with Brian McDonald. Brian, I've been waiting over a year to have this conversation with you, and I'm going to be letting the audience know exactly what I mean. But to start us off, if you could share something that you've learned recently that you feel would be either interesting or fun for our audience.
Well, one thing I found out recently that I'm really excited about is that my favorite author in the entire world, who published a new book in Japanese last year, that his book is coming out later this year. And I'm like so excited to read it. And I actually commented on it on social media and he actually responded to my comment. So something I learned is that people who are like, even people who, it's Haruki Murakami, who's like my favorite author, and he's won the Nobel Prize. It's exciting when someone with a Nobel Prize responds to your comments on Facebook. So I was really excited to learn that he was happy with what I had to say about it.
That's amazing.
Yeah. What you don't know, Brian, is he looked over to one of his friends and said, "Hey, did you know that Brian McDonald commented on my new book?"
Yeah, that's great.
Everyone, I am happy to introduce Brian McDonald. He is the CCO and co-founder of the Zillion Agency. And I have to tell this story that at the AMA conference in 2022, I witnessed a wonderful presentation with Brian and someone else. I went up to him afterwards. He was gracious. He gave me his contact information. I intended to have him on the podcast. Got home and misplaced the information.
So
yes. So fast forward to 2023. And then by this time, I'm like, I don't remember that gentleman's name, but it just so happened that I ran into him and he said something to me. I'm like, "You're the guy that I've been wanting to talk to." And he didn't give me that look of "who the heck are you?" So he's very nice about it, but he could have. And I said, "I have to have you on our podcast." So again, Brian, thank you very much. And I'm sorry if I've bored everyone, but it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you. If you could just tell everyone a little bit about the Zillion Agency and what you do.
Sure. So we're a branding and marketing agency, not exclusively working in higher education, but a lot of our work is in higher education, more than half. It's by far our biggest practice area. And my business partner and I both came up through very non-traditional ways of getting into higher ed marketing. I myself came up through the traditional advertising agency route. So I didn't start out in advertising. I started out in management consulting. I have a master's degree in mathematics, which is really weird for someone who does marketing or advertising in general, and then to higher ed marketing even beyond that. And then went to work for some really good advertising agencies. I worked at Ogilvy & Mather. I worked at Leo Burnett. On a lot of the brands that you've heard of, I've worked on, you know, the Procter & Gamble portfolio, the laundry portfolio. I've worked on Unilever's Dove and Hellmann's mayonnaise and Magnum bars. I worked on American Express. I worked on IBM. So I've worked on a lot of big consumer brands. And what we really try to do at Zillion, and for our higher ed clients, well, for all of our clients, but especially the higher ed clients, because they're the biggest practice area that we've got, is bring the level of work for them up to the level of that enjoyed by consumer brands. Like, to me, universities are amazing places. They find out the most amazing things about our universe that are discoverable, right? And it seems to me that that ought to be something that's at least as valuable as, you know, producing soap. That's always my goal, is to try to get our clients to the level of sophistication and thinking that that consumer brands have enjoyed for many years.
Thank you. And with that note, you speak very well about the challenge of distinctive branding, especially within higher ed. And that's where I would like to take our conversation first. And if you could, if you can kind of describe what either distinctive branding or taking ownership of branding ideas means within higher ed, if you could start off our conversation like that.
Sure. It's a real challenge for higher ed, I think, in part because, I mean, especially in the United States, I think, because there are so many institutions of higher learning. And physics is physics. It doesn't change if you're in New York City or rural Utah. You know, it doesn't, you know, French literature is the same whether you study it in Chicago or Los Angeles. There's so many ways in which universities are similar that they tend to mask the ways in which they're distinctive. And there are, in fact, a lot of ways in which universities are distinctive from each other. And what we really try to do is flesh those out and build those into the brands that we work with. So in terms of ownable ideas, I do want to say that, to my mind, and I'm by no means saying this is the only way to think about it, this is just how I think about it. There are three different ways that an idea can be ownable. It can be ownable by virtue of the fact that legally, you're the only people who can say this, right? Like, you might have a patent on something that nobody else has, and if you're going to build your whole brand around that, that could be legally, you're only you can say this. The second way is only I can say this credibly, meaning if other people try to say this, they don't have the credibility that we have when we say it. And the third way is only I am saying this, right? That I'm saying something that is not at all what anybody else is saying. And that's sort of like, if you want to think about it, like Nike and Adidas, Nike is the one that says, just do it, right? Mm-hmm. Nike sneakers and Adidas sneakers, probably both very good, right? And probably not, you know, probably not getting something from one that you're not getting from the other, but only Nike is saying, just do this, just do it. So that's the third way, to my mind, is that, and the problem with that for higher education is that method is extremely expensive, right? Mm-hmm. Nike spends hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars every year to defend the territory that they've carved out with just do it, right? And legally, the first way, where only you can say this legally, is problematic because, as I said, there are so many things about universities that are not necessarily distinctive from each other that is often not a very fruitful way to build a university or a higher education brand. So most higher education brands fall into that second category about credibility, and looking for and establishing that credibility becomes the key part of building a brand in higher education, I think.
I love the three that you just outlined, Brian. I have not heard it that way, and I think it's so helpful because I do think that your assessment is correct. I mean, very few people have that legal version, the patentable idea. I mean, it's out there, and you know, I certainly know that big research R1 institutions have patents that they could use, but you know, Purdue isn't going to lead with, you know, we have the whitest white paint in the world. I mean,
right.
That's a fact. It's something that they do. Mm-hmm. It's something that I know, but it's not something that's going to draw a lot of students to come there. So not only is it the idea of what is going to be your brand, but then how is that going to speak to your prospective audience and your prospective students? And right. I agree with you that most schools do not have the resources to be able to pull off the consumer brand of just do it. There are some that are maybe getting closer, but for the vast majority of the, you know, 5,200 schools in North America, there's maybe, you know, three or four that could pull off something like that.
I think a really great example of that is the Purdue work, the reaching for the next great thing that comes organically from their historic relationship with spaceflight and astronauts that comes organically from who they are. And I think that's a great example of a higher education brand being in the space of only we are saying this because only they can say it, right?
Like yeah, that's such a great point, Brian, because I mean, that's the reason why they're on the list of the 100 brands that matter in Fast Company. So yeah. They're up there next to Nike. They're up there next to the right. other ones that, so they've been recognized. But I say all that to say, yes, that can happen in higher ed. But for the majority of all of you listening on this podcast today, we need to focus on number two. So unpack that a little bit more, Brian, on this credibility idea, the idea that you're going to be able to say something that you are saying from your own credibility.
Yeah. If you look across the spectrum of work that universities are producing, they're producing it, and if you're in the United States, they're producing it all, pretty much all of it, in the English language. And the English language is a finite resource. There are only so many words. And when you want to find words that are inspirational enough to build ideas around, you even collapse that bubble a lot further. So a lot of universities tend to start using the same language to build brand ideas around. But what they're not doing, I think, in a lot of cases, is finding the reasons behind those choice of words, the intentionality behind those choice of words. And I'll give you an example. So when the University of Wisconsin was looking to launch a $4.2 billion capital campaign, they looked for a brand idea. And the brand idea that was developed for them was this notion of being boundless together. And where that came from was the truth that the University of Wisconsin-Madison is the only land-grant university in the United States where all of the schools and colleges of the university are physically co-located on one campus. This notion of being boundless together came from that notion, this co-location. And that's how you explain that, you know, a university in a relatively small Midwestern state, not a big population, not a huge industrial base, primarily agricultural, how this university became the school that penned the Social Security Act, founded National Public Radio, how they produced like generations of people who have been iconic leaders in the United States, right? Like the fact of that has driven everything that's happened there. Now, other universities have used the words, and one comes to mind is here in Canada, the University of Toronto really started using, built a campaign around the idea of boundless. But to my mind, it didn't kind of go any, it was just the word. It was a feeling, and they did really well with it. They raised a lot of money, but there was no reason behind it. It was a rallying cry, but not one that I think brought people into the meaning of it and why they were saying it and why it was true of them and not of anybody else. When you look at the two side by side, one of them comes with a way to talk about the language itself, to talk about what we're doing, to talk about the idea and how that idea comes to life. So you can see how it plays across the whole institution. And one of them, I think, struggles with that.
So Brian, as we're kind of talking about these ownable brand ideas, let's talk a little bit more about how can you, as a school, set this brand messaging up and kind of marry it with your institutional values and what the audience is expecting? Because I think that's such a big part of today's world of higher ed marketing.
I agree. And like, it's one of the reasons why I think a lot of institutions make, they tend to look at their branding as being what I would call admissions branding, that the sole goal of the brand is to bring in more students, mm-hmm. which is true for a lot of schools that are, especially ones that are tuition dependent. But what we always try to do is to look for an idea that speaks across all the different audiences. So how do you develop a brand idea that can speak to a 17-year-old prospective or a 15-year-old prospective student? They're right. starting to reach out to them younger and younger. And a 70-year-old person who might donate, you know, a building or $100 million, how do you come up with an idea that makes this place a place that, you know, the staff and faculty want to go to work every day? It has to be the same idea that works with all of these people, because these are all people who are drawn to a specific community, right? So they're not coming to it for it to be a different thing. They're coming to it with each with an understanding of what it is, and that understanding or what they want from it might be different. So, you know, what a prospective student is looking for is not what a donor is looking for, but yet you want to create these lifelong customer journeys, right? Universities are interesting to me because it's probably the sole example of a one-time purchase conferring a lifetime of connection. And you don't want to feel that, wow, it's not the same place where I went to college anymore. Why would I give them money if I felt that way? Right? You want a brand idea that that outlives a whole lifetime of connection. And developing ideas that can flex to speak to those different audiences becomes really important.
Yeah. And I think it might be worth just kind of wrapping up this section just to kind of make sure that everybody in our audience understands that we're talking about, you know, big brand ideas. What's that differentiator? What's that thing that's about you that, you know, those three elements that you talked about? That's different than enrollment campaigns. It's different than capital campaign, you know, because a lot of times we might develop a campaign that we hang our hat on for enrollment, or that we, you know, try to help people understand why we're doing a certain capital campaign. But the mm-hmm. brand is a lot, it's the big umbrella over everything. Brian, is there a way that you would better describe that for people? Because I think sometimes people get confused thinking that, oh, brand is what we do to get students in the door. And I think you just did a really good job of articulating yeah. that.
Well, it's interesting. I think people are much more comfortable and familiar when you talk about these things in the roles of consumer brands, because I don't think there are models yet necessarily, or a lot of models that people are familiar with in the higher ed space.
Sure.
So an example that I always like to go back to is one from when I worked on consumer brands, which is Dove. Dove is, the Dove brand is about beauty being the right of every woman. And whether that's the campaign for Real Beauty or the launch of, you know, of Dove Pro Age or the launch of a different, any of their products, those individual campaigns can live. But the overarching idea about Dove is that being beautiful is the right of every woman, regardless of her age. And that brand idea can support a lot of different campaigns underneath it, whether those campaigns are targeting lifelong use of their product or very temporal uses of their product, right? Yeah. So a brand to me should be something that lives on and is independent of any specific tactic or campaign that we're doing right now.
That's great. I love that. I love that.
I'm going to try to smoothly go around the corner, or maybe even a U-turn, because Brian, something that you also speak to is the power of detractors in branding. And would like to know if you could talk about how detractors can unexpectedly strengthen a brand's message, and then maybe even share an example of where this approach has been beneficial.
Sure. I should say by detractors, I would include people who are not necessarily supporters. It doesn't have to be that they're actively against you. They're just not necessarily people who are, you know, rah-rah on your brand, right? Mm-hmm. So to me, a lot of higher ed branding tends to focus on the keeners, right? Like the people who love us already, and which is great because you want to get lots of passion. You want to build a lot of passion into a brand. And that's really understandable and always a lot of fun. To me, some of the best brand ideas that I've ever come up with have actually come from really unexpected sources. They've come from the groundskeepers. They've come from the maintenance people. They've come from the lunch ladies in the cafeteria, like people who see and interact with students, with faculty, like every day for a long time, and have a kind of institutional knowledge that that traditionally doesn't get included in brand building. And yet they have, you know, they have great stories to tell about, you know, what fun it is to that they've the joy that they've experienced doing this, or what fun that they see going on, and how the university has helped them in their careers, you know, in lots of different ways. One example that comes to mind is work that I had done for the University of Massachusetts, where it turns out that they have the best food service, but I think they were the best food service among large universities. I think there was one tiny little college somewhere was ranked better than UMass, UMass Amherst, I should say. But, you know, it was a really tiny place. The stories and joy that we got from talking to this woman, particularly she was the woman who made the omelets at breakfast time, was just remarkable. And it really opened up a door to find out a lot more information about them. Where what we found out in talking to her was that the students on the campus have their own farm where they grow a lot of the food that the university then buys and uses in the food service. So students are growing their own food on campus and then eating it in the dining hall. And it turned out to be a big reason why kids wanted to go to UMass Amherst, because, I mean, no one's going to go to a school where the food service is terrible. It might not be the reason you choose to go to a school, but it might be the deciding factor among all other things being equal. It ended up being like such a great example of something that UMass was doing very differently. And then that whole led into the idea of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, being this place where, you know, it was the place where the Revolutionary War started, where this, like, there were a lot of civil rights things that started in the United States, that Massachusetts had always been about this sort of independent spirit. And that tied into this sort of, we want to be self-sufficient in terms of our food and what goes even into our bodies on campus, that it organically became part of this really great idea. We could talk about this in a way that's incredibly ownable because other schools weren't doing this. And it ended up really helping us build an idea that was grounded in a truth that other people weren't using or couldn't really say. So again, to go back to what can I say credibly, that's a credible thing that they could point to and say, right? That this is something we do very differently here, and we do it because it brings about all these really great things that happen.
I love that, because I think that it does a couple things, Brian. It also illustrates how when you discover a truth about your school, and I think it's interesting that you discovered that through a conversation with someone who's making omelets, if you're willing and able to start pulling the thread at that, there's a lot that you can discover that you can then turn into a lot more. Because a lot of times when we discover those little things about our school that maybe we take for granted, or we just see as it's part of the background, that's something that is very unique. And it's something that it has a whole scaffolding for storytelling around it that I think is really important, that that a deft brand person like yourself can go in and really start to leverage and use to build a fuller brand for the entire institution. Mm-hmm. So I love that example.
A lot of higher education branding, I think, tends to focus on what they do. I usually find that the more interesting place to talk, to have discussions, is about the how they do it or the why they do it.
Yeah.
Because again, there's often so much overlap in what individual institutions do that the what becomes sort of table stakes, and the how and the why become the places where you find those differentiators.
I think that's a really wise point. You even said it earlier. I mean, you can study French literature in rural Utah, or you can study it in New York or Philadelphia or whatever. But I think that's the how and the why kind of Simon Sinek stuff that's really going to help us get to the bottom of some things. That's great.
Brian, if you could, please explain how institutions can tailor some of the narratives around their brand.
Sure. So a lot of times what higher education institutions are looking to disseminate are stories, right? You want to have examples of, you know, a student who's had a terrific experience at your school, or, you know, or a faculty member who's discovered some amazing thing. a lot of times what I see is a story come out and it just sort of sits there and it becomes, this is a story about a prospective student. This is a story that's targeting prospective students. This other story over here is a story about attracting an alum to give some money. This other story is about selling parents on an idea. And when you really look at it, the first story probably can satisfy all of those things. It just has to be told in a different way. So why a student is going to want to go to a university is because they want to think, okay, I see that story. That person isn't me, but I can see how what they did could apply to me and how I could take a similar journey. What a parent wants to understand is that the university is going to provide your child with the same opportunity it provided this child in order to have a similar experience. What an alum wants to know before they give their money is, this student came to our university because an alum had given money for a scholarship that allowed us to recruit this student to bring them into our school and set them up for the success that they had here. So the same story can satisfy all these different needs instead of stories about universities just having these siloed buckets. It's just a slight matter of tweaking and an understanding of the different audiences. And the same story can speak to all those different audiences in ways that are relevant to each of them. And it's the same, factually the same story.
Yeah, I love that, Brian, because I think that it also kind of gets to the point a lot of times that I think that you mentioned being siloed. I think we do that too many times, and I'm going to get a little bit in the weeds, but like with Comflows, we're just talking to the student. And it's like we forget sometimes that, mom has a huge impact into the decisions that prospective students do, at least for traditional undergrad students. Mm-hmm. So figuring out who's that influencer, is it mom? Is it dad? Is it a spouse for non-traditionals? Who is that other person that we need to be talking to? And how do we tell the stories from their perspective and that's going to resonate with them and their role as an influencer? And so I love your idea of being able to kind of take a story and then look at it from multiple, it's a multifaceted, object. How can we look at it and how does that light go through that facet to be able to shine something new for that particular audience? I mean,
yeah.
Is that the kind of way you're approaching things?
It is. It's also, you can look for I think you can kind of vet the stories before you get there, vet them before you have the story. Like, what are the stories that we can tell that are going to allow us to do that? And those are the stories to really bring to the forefront, the ones that are going to allow you easily to make these points. Because the more people, the more connections with different kinds of people you have over the same piece of information allows those people to have conversations with each other about you. And that's where I think brands really come alive, is in the conversations that universities enable, as opposed to not necessarily the ones that they're disseminating, right? I think people talking about you in a good way is equally, if not more valuable than the things you say yourself.
Well, and just to kind of, tag on that a little bit, I mean, a lot of times we talk about brand awareness, we talk about getting the word out. And I think that that's sometimes it's a one-way street. People think mm-hmm. about, large, brand awareness campaigns. But I love the fact that you just said that you want to be able to set up conversations. You want to be able to have conversations. And I think the best type of branding, best type of marketing is when you're doing things that people are talking amongst themselves with, right, and that you as an institution can join in that conversation. And there's a lot of different places that can happen. Sometimes it happens on social media. Sometimes it happens at gatherings. Sometimes mm-hmm. it happens in other formats. But I love the fact that you said that and maybe tease that out a little bit more about, I think sometimes universities forget that is another aspect of marketing and branding that we can lean into that yeah. we sometimes don't because we're so worried about the brand awareness or we're so worried about the lead generation or other things.
Yeah. There's something I always remember from my time working at Ogilvy was the notion of the value of strangers with experience, right? That was the term that they used. And as a marketer, you're a little bit behind an eight ball because you have a vested interest in saying what it is you're saying. Whereas the parent of a student talking to a parent, to the parent of a prospective student about your institution, that in a lot of ways is going to have a lot more credibility to the parent of their prospective student than anything you're saying to them. Like hearing from their son's friend's parents, like he's having a fabulous time at this school. Is going to have a lot of credibility. So setting up your brand to enable those kinds of conversations is where you're really going to start to win, right? You can tell people what's true about you all day long and they, you know, they'll believe quite a bit of it, but it doesn't have the same weight as strangers with experience sometimes. Yeah.
Love that. I love that a lot.
Brian, we would like to ask one last question of you. And if you have either an idea, a thought, or a piece of advice that could be easily implemented, but could have impact by an individual, a team, or an institution, if we ask you for what that piece of advice would be, do you have one that you can offer?
I can, actually. I mean, obviously, in the past several years, a lot of higher education marketing has moved into the social space. It's right there. It's sitting right there. It's easy to access. Everybody can do it. The jury's still out on whether people are doing it well or not. But one thing that I know to be true is that conversations are happening about all these institutions, whether they participate in them or not, right? These conversations are happening out there. And I think that it's really important to recognize that and insofar as possible to take part in them. Because if you're taking part in an easy conversation, it's a great way to easily present information. If you're taking part in a difficult conversation, it shows you're not afraid to engage over difficult topics, right? There are all different kinds of ways. If you're engaging in something that doesn't even necessarily have to do with your school, but might touch upon your school's values, right? If you're talking about, there are all kinds of social topics being discussed on social media, that's what it's for. Participating in those conversations is very enlightening about how your institution feels about them, about how you react to them, how you respond to them. And again, doing it in a social media space is very public. So it becomes sort of like building in this strangers with experience kind of thing, right? Where you're arming people to talk about you in a way that's more meaningful, a way that's more knowledgeable than maybe they had been before. Right. If you're participating in these conversations, you're getting your point across. You're saying the things that people might be curious about, even if they're not asking about them necessarily. You're just providing a point of view. It really does enable them to start to build those connections and have meaningful content when that topic is discussed.
Thank you very much. We're going to end on that note. And I must say, I find what you say very inspiring. And I'm sure our listeners will, too. We have been talking with Brian McDonald, and he is the co-founder of the Zillion Agency. Brian, what would be the easiest and best way for people to find you if they would like to do so?
You can find us at zillionagency.com. That's our website.
And you personally, are you active on LinkedIn?
I am. Yes, Brian Very McDonald. Good. Well, I think there's like a million people with my name on LinkedIn.
add Zillion to that and you'll find him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's M-A-C, McDonald.
Correct.
Again, thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast. And I hope others are inspired as I am and can see the reason why that after a year, I knew I was going to get you on the podcast.
That's great.
Well, thank you so much. No, this has been a lot of fun.
Very good. Bart, do you have any final thoughts you would like to share?
I do. I just want to also express my sincere gratitude, Brian. It's been a pleasure getting to know you on this podcast. And thank you for your wisdom and your experience in bringing it. I had a great time having a conversation. I really loved so much of what Brian said, but just a couple things I want to point out. This idea of strangers with experience, I mean, he brought that up a couple times, even there in the very last point about engaging with social media and making that happen. It kind of follows along the lines with some of the things I've been talking a lot about, whether it's in my book or some other places, with this idea of figuring out who you are and then making it part of your brand and making it part of the communication that you're doing. And then enabling those strangers with experience to be able to talk about that so that you become discoverable. I think one of the biggest challenges for a lot of the majority of the schools coming up is the enrollment cliff. And the more students that discover you, whether that's through your brand, whether that's through social media, whether it's through strangers with experience, that is going to add to your ability to recruit and retain more students. But I think the other thing with that is it's also going to add to the credibility that you have. So when we talked about those three elements of ways that branding can be done, credibility is where most of us are going to be sitting in. Strangers with experience are going to be the ones that are going to boost up that credibility for you. It's not something that you can just make up yourself. I mean, you can discover those things, much like what Brian talked about with the University of Massachusetts Amherst and how they discovered that part of the brand and were able to claim that credibility. But for the rest of the world to really believe that credibility, it has to be authentic through those strangers with experience. And so love that. Love this whole conversation. Thanks again, Brian. This has been a wonderful conversation.
Thanks.
Thank you for tuning in to the Higher Ed Marketer podcast, brought to you by Kaler Solutions, your specialist in educational marketing and branding, and by Ring Digital, the experts in ad targeting, known for significantly improving response and yield by accurately targeting ads directly to the devices of individuals on your enrollment and fundraising lists. Also, always, our heartfelt thanks to Rob Conlin and his entire team at West Point Studios. My name is Troy Singer, and on behalf of me, Bart Kaler, and our wonderful guest, Brian McDonald, thank you very much for joining us.
You've been listening to The Higher Ed Marketer. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. The Higher Ed Marketer is a production of Kaler Solutions and Ring Digital in partnership with Westport Studios. Views and opinions expressed by guests on The Higher Ed Marketer are their own and may not reflect the views and opinions of their organization. Know someone who's a mover and a shaker in higher ed marketing? Visit www.higheredmarketerpodcast.com and click on our Contact Us page. We'd love to have you tell us about them. Until next time.